720 WGN. Hi there, it's Amy Guth here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. One of the last broadcasts from Tribune Tower, so it's a bittersweet day, but we'll be with you. You won't even notice a thing. We'll just be across the river here very, very soon. Lots to do on the Wintrust Business Lunch today. We're going to have a little bit shorter show than usual to get you to that White Sox pregame and all that good stuff, but we're still going to pack lots of action in the half hour that we have. So joining us first up is Samantha Baumkamp, regular contributor to this program and business reporter at Chicago Tribune. She wrote about the food truck case against the city of Chicago that's headed to the state Supreme Court. Very, very interesting. And I would say, Samantha, rather frustrating, tedious kind of laws around this story. It's one I've been kind of watching for a couple of years. It's been so interesting. I've even talked to some people that have food trucks and heard their position on it. And so what is the latest as we kind of go through this story?
Well, the food truck that is that brought the lawsuit, Cupcakes for Courage, originally started the lawsuit in 2012, but has now lost the court case in 2016 and then lost an appeal in 2017. So now the effort began in February to bring the case to the Supreme Court. And this week, the state Supreme Court finally said that they would indeed hear it, but it's not expected till the end of the year at least.
And a lot of the issue around this case has to do with proximity. And it's really about, I think we see food trucks kind of out and about, and we don't necessarily realize it if you're not in that sector. But there's some really particular and kind of interesting ruling on a law anyway that really dictates where a food truck can and cannot be, that makes much more of the city inaccessible than we realize, perhaps.
Right, exactly. The food truck supporters say that the rule that you're speaking about, the 200-foot rule, which says that a food truck can't be anywhere less than 200 feet away from a restaurant or any establishment that serves food, which includes like Walgreens and convenience stores and everything. It excludes a lot of prime real estate, especially in the Loop where there is the most foot traffic, obviously. So food truck supporters say that it cuts the Loop space down to about 97%. So there's only a few food truck stands, quote unquote, that are usable for these small business owners just getting started in the restaurant industry. So it makes it really difficult. The other rule that they are contesting in this lawsuit that's going to the Supreme Court this year is the rule that says the city put in place that said that they have to have a GPS on board so the health inspections and all the other city officials can know where they are at all times, which they argue is unconstitutional.
And, in looking through social media reactions, it's always interesting to kind of get the pulse on the conversation through looking at tweets and things like that. It seems like a lot of people that aren't connected to this in any way and don't really have a horse in the race seem to be saying, well, wait a minute, this seems like it's just protecting restaurants.
Right. It's a tough thing because the city says, and the courts have agreed, that we have a right to protect restaurants who pay property taxes and pay a lot of taxes to the city that the food trucks don't. But the food trucks say, hey, we're just small business owners trying to scrape by. We're blue collar guys, trying to do the best we can. We would never, if we were a Mexican food truck, for example, park in front of a Mexican restaurant. That just doesn't make economic sense for us. So their argument in this is that the competition will work itself out, where the city has long proclaimed that it has a right to protect one industry from another from competition.
Yeah, which makes sense, which is fair. But then again, I also think you're going to eat what you're going to eat. You know what I mean? Even if you are parked next, or even if a food truck is parked in front of a restaurant with similar cuisine, your time dictates that, your lifestyle, that, there's so much. The consumer's going to decide what the consumer's going to decide. And I think it's always interesting, anytime we see in any sort of industry rulings of any kind that try to restrict consumer behavior that's already there, like it seems like a can't unring a bell sort of a thing. We saw this digitally, we saw this with social media platforms, and this seems very similar.
Right. It's a tough call. It really is. I mean, and the food truck's plight is one that's, you know, ongoing. And, you know, we had an incident this week as well at, near the Willis Tower, where it's one of the most popular and lucrative spots for food trucks. And they got in a scuffle and police were called. And, you know, my sources on the ground just said that this is all a result of bubbling tensions mm-hmm. from the city enforcing these rules that they say, you know, they're bound to enforce until the state Supreme Court says otherwise. But at the same time, these guys are, as new licenses for food trucks are being issued by the city, at the same time, it's the fight for competition, the fight for that lunch customer is getting even more intense. So it's created a really difficult, tense environment in the city. And a lot of food trucks are going out of business as a result. The association says about 10, you know, we only have about 100 on the road right now, and about 10 are going out of business every year. So it's not a great business to be in right now.
Right, definitely sure. not. And then there's the other piece of this about, you know, we talk about distance to restaurants, all that, and that is there about timing, about how long you can even sit there. So here we have, right. You know, 97-ish% of the loop that's relatively inaccessible to a food truck. And then once you do find a spot, you can only sit there for a couple of hours.
Yeah. And that was a super complicated, although that's not being challenged in the lawsuit, that was a super complicated part of the agreements and the negotiation between food trucks and the city, because 2 hours, what does that mean? Does that mean I get to serve with my window open for 2 hours, or does that mean I can't park longer than 2 hours? Because a lot of these guys are frying and cooking on board. Obviously, they're all cooking on board. But if I have hot oil in the truck right. after an hour and a half, am I going to have to move and put my, you know, potentially, you know, put my employees at risk.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So there's just these like little details that blow right. up and, you know, really cause a difficulty.
Well, that's an interesting point, right? Because if you have, say, your product is like cupcakes or donuts or something that's very portable, you can, as soon as you park, you're ready to go, as right. opposed to someone who's going to make that food or do a little prep or warm things up. That is a very interesting point. So it's a lot more complicated than it seems. It's really just not just about driving around and restaurants feeling threatened. There's like so much to it. And so as this goes to the Supreme Court, what are some key dates we should be looking for and kind of key milestones?
The state Supreme Court says that it won't be heard until at least November, because both sides have to develop their arguments. And that is the next session that we're looking at. But it's quite possible that it could be 2019. And the food truck industry is, at least their spokespeople currently, are not very optimistic that will come down in their favor. So as far as we're concerned right now, it looks like the status quo in the food truck industry in Chicago will continue to be small.
Yeah, and it might be a really interesting summer if you know, it stays this contentious and tempers stay, you know, tension stays this high. It might be interesting.
Yeah, you never know.
So, well, we'll keep turning to you for the latest. Samantha Baumkamp, business reporter at Chicago Tribune, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Amy.
All right, we are going to take a little break. And when we come back, we are going to be talking about Spotify's policy that they rolled back after a good deal of backlash back in just a bit here on 720 WGN.
Right, it's Amy Guth here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks for being with us today. One of our last broadcasts from Tribune Tower, beautiful Tribune Tower. That's all right. I'll be with you again at 7 o'clock tonight for the Saturday night special. We're going to be talking about, it's our annual book show. So we're going to be talking about writing, in particular, nonfiction and hidden narrative. So you're going to stick around for that. But right now here on the Wintrust Business Lunch, we're joined by AJ Dellinger, Nights and Weekends editor at Gizmodo, who is here to talk with us about Spotify's hateful conduct policy. And I'm doing air quotes as I say that, because that is their term, not mine, which they removed yesterday, and why they instituted it in the first place and all that. And there was, because there was some backlash. AJ, welcome to the program. Thanks for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
So talk us through this, because this seemed like it kind of happened quickly and there was kerfuffle and lots going on, but there was, you know, there's always a lot going on right now. So it's, we barely get to see one story through before another one bubbles up. But it seemed like this kind of bubbled up very quickly and quite passionately, and a lot of social media users were reacting quite strongly. So talk us through this for those who may have missed it.
Sure. So earlier this month, Spotify implemented its hateful content policy. Essentially, it was an attempt to punish artists that promote violent or objectionable actions in their song lyrics or engage in those actions in their personal life. Essentially, it was Spotify making a moral judgment call on what artists they wanted to promote within their own content, in particular their playlist that they curate. Immediately, that hit a couple artists, the biggest one being R. Kelly, and it kind of caused this cascade of backlash from listeners as well as from music executives, other artists who objected to it, wanted to support some of the artists who were affected, and I think, you know, probably to some degree didn't want to see themselves be hit with that if Spotify decides that their very broad policy applied to some of those artists' music as well. Spotify pretty quickly changed their tune, rolled back some of the punishments, except for against R. Kelly, who I believe is still banned from playlists, and essentially admitted this week that while the policy, they believe the policy was the correct thing to do, they didn't do due diligence on it, and they didn't apply it in a way that was going to be, you know, something that they could apply evenly across the platform.
Right. And there is a differentiation, I can't even get that word out of my mouth today, to note, and that is being included in Spotify versus being promoted in the playlist, which I think created some confusion initially about being banned completely from the platform versus being just excluded from playlists.
Right. None of the artists were removed from Spotify at all. You could still go find their music. You could search them out. It was just Spotify's own curated playlists and the promoted positions that they have within the app. When you open it up and you see like new releases and things like that, the artists were removed from those parts of the platform.
And has there been that much transparency around what Spotify's even classifying as violent or objectionable lyrics? Because that could be kind of a gray area. What some person might find quite upsetting and triggering might be not for another person. And, you know, then it becomes Spotify's decision. Are they being open or were they being open about where that line is for them?
They did try to kind of draw the line when they put out the policy, but they kept it very broad and even admitted when they initially rolled out the policy that there were going to be a lot of judgment calls on their part. I think it was noteworthy that most of the artists who were hit with the ban, the limited ban, at the start were primarily rap artists, were in particular black men. There were a lot of objections within the industry to that. There were activist groups that started making suggestions to Spotify for other artists that should be suspended, and I think it just kind of snowballed beyond what the company was ready to deal with.
And were there any artists in particular that were kind of leading this charge? I mean, we've talked a lot about R. Kelly in this whole conversation, how this has impacted him, but were there other artists that maybe accused Spotify of, hey, this is unfair, you've misinterpreted my lyric, or you know, something like that?
There were a couple other artists, particularly a rapper named TK and another named XXXTentacion, both of which had their music removed from playlists. I don't know that those artists, I mean, I know there were complaints from their representation, but I don't know if those artists in particular contacted Spotify. But Kendrick Lamar in particular reached out to Spotify to express his concerns about it. From my understanding, there were other artists and record label heads that also contacted Spotify about it. I'm sure over concern that their artists may also face punishment from the company. So it seemed like, for the most part, there was outcry from within the industry, even from artists who weren't affected.
Right, right. It did seem that way, certainly. And it was, to be honest, it was a very interesting conversation to follow on social media because I didn't see too many people tweeting about or commenting about the main core issue. But I saw a lot of people having peripheral conversations about different aspects of it, which I found really interesting. And a lot of people kind of went to side with a particular artist or speak out against that artist or something like that. It was an interesting thing to follow. So now that they've rolled this back, is there a next step we're anticipating, or is this kind of done for now?
It's hard to say. I think Spotify as a company has been kind of towing this line that there's a lot of playlists that they put out that support, you know, social causes. I think this is something that the company cares about and maybe will rework to some degree, maybe something that is more defined and going to be easier to apply rather than leaving it up to judgment. But it is also possible that they're going to regret dipping their toes in this at all, and maybe we'll just step back for a little bit. It's not the first time that Spotify has taken this type of action. After the events of Charlottesville, they moved to remove music from white supremacist and white national groups from their platform. So this is something that they care about, but they're clearly going to have to go back to the drawing board on this one.
Yeah, sometimes the intention is perfectly good, but the way it rolls out doesn't quite land. Indeed. Well, thank you so much, AJ Dellinger from Gizmodo, for talking with us about this issue. We will keep turning to you as more stuff like this happens. Thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.
You bet. All right. Well, I would say we're going to take a break and get you to news, but we're not going to do that. In fact, we have a short show today so we can get you to that White Sox pregame and that all that good stuff. I know you're going to want to hear from Andy Mazur and all that he's got to say leading up to the White Sox game at 1:10, I do believe. So you're going to stay tuned for that, all that good stuff. But we are going to take a break. We are going to get you to news. And then we're going to wrap things up back in just a bit here on 720 WGN. All right, here in just a bit, we're going to get you to news with Bob Kessler, but wrapping things up. This is bittersweet to me, Griffin. This is our last biz lunch here at Tribune Tower.
That's crazy. Yeah,
I can't believe it.
Snuck up on me.
I know. It seemed like it was this far off event in the far distant future. And now here we are.
And here we are. And it's a short show. It's just feeling like I'm being ripped out of here.
We're being forced out the door.
They'll have to carry me out.
I know. I will say this is kind of maybe a little silly, but you know what I'm going to miss the most? And that is sitting here, because our new home is up many floors high. It is really fun to, like, when people stop by the window and wave and say hi, especially when it's little kids. They'll stop and be like, oh, there's a person in there, and you can wave at them. And
on the radio.
Yeah, and I'm going to miss that. I guess we can wave to birds and people in the adjacent hotel if we spy in their rooms.
I just toured it for the first time, actually, today.
It's kinda beautiful.
And it's beautiful. The view is beautiful, yeah. But it is like you feel a little more secluded up there in the clouds.
Yeah.
And, yeah, see, even when people don't stop and just walk by, you feel like you're talking, that's like the people you're talking to, sort of, not really. But
And for us in particular, Griffin, I feel like we have witnessed so many protests because so many things happen on Saturday mornings, and they're always walking by the window, and, you know, and we see all these signs, and people stop and point at their sign, and I feel like we've witnessed many things over the years here. So
definitely. Well, goodbye.
Well, bye.
we'll talk to you again next week, so it's not really
anything. I was like, well, we're not. I hope we're not getting fired in the movie. Yeah, you guys aren't coming with us, right? Well, Bob Kessler and Griffin Filipich, thank you both, and we shall meet again in our new digs.